One of my favorite quotes ever was Fred Rogers, and he said, "Simple and deep is far more essential than complex and shallow." And so I feel like oftentimes that we think it needs to be complex.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like, the gospel is simple. You know, it's so simple. And that a thief on a cross could look at Christ and know that that's where his salvation lie. And so I think that that's what you're looking for, is that especially in spiritual matters where God is just impressing on your heart, this makes sense to me. This is, you know, I haven't just scratched the surface.
Hi, I'm Xander, and this is the Days Before You podcast. Learning is such a natural part of life. It often happens automatically. I know when I started applying to colleges, I didn't even have a backup plan or anything else, because going to college was just a natural next step, and it was the assumption that I would just get in. But when I started classes, it was clear that this was going to be very different from high school. But it wasn't until my last semester, unfortunately, that I realized academics just weren't for me. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed my college experience. I had made wonderful friends. I had wonderful time there, and I learned a lot. It's just that I learned a lot more by doing than I ever did studying from a textbook. This made me wonder, there has to be other people like me, people that like just learn more from doing than by reading a book. And that made me think even further. How does this apply to my spiritual journey? Is it possible to learn about religion from doing rather than studying? Or is studying just a natural barrier to get to know Jesus better? Which is why today I have brought Heidi Ruckel. She is the Assistant Education Coordinator of the Kentucky-Tennessee Conference. And today, she's going to teach us a little bit more about learning. So Heidi, hello. How are you?
Hello. Good. How are you?
I am doing good. So I wanted to ask you a few questions. You know, just explain to me, like, the first thing is, like, how do we, if I'm a person who learns by, like, tactical things and, like, you know, actually doing, is there a way to reconcile that with studying the Bible, for example?
Yeah, you know, the truth is that over history, if you look at even in the Bible, most education was done by learning. It wasn't, you know, by doing, by hands-on. You know, I think that oftentimes we in education have a tendency to want to forget that a person is more than just their head. Like, their body becomes like something that is just used to transport their head. But we want to really educate for the whole person, for the, you know, their physical, their spiritual, their mental. And if you're doing that properly, it's going to be more than just head knowledge that you're trying to educate for. And yeah, totally, 100%. You are not the only one that there's more to it than that. Many, many learners. In fact, every single classroom is filled with students that are very, very different and learn very, very differently. And that's part of the quandary of education, is learning how to reach every student and their different learning styles.
Yes. So can you go a little bit deeper? Like, how do you do that? Like, what practical ways, I guess, as a teacher, or maybe from a student's perspective, how does a student approach that?
You know, it's difficult for younger kids. I think that there are times as educators that we're very tempted to hand a worksheet or hand a book and say, well, you know, learn. Do it this way. But just figuring out what learning styles there are in your classroom is going to make a big difference. I know when I was first in the classroom many, many, many moons ago, there was something that was called format. And okay. It's four different quadrants of learning. So, you know, there's hands-on learning, there is book learning, there's auditory learning. So learning what each child is going to need to best meet their needs. But really what you do in every single lesson, you're going to try to meet every single one of those learning styles so that everybody's needs are being met. If you're doing it well, that's going to be what you do. You teach to every learning style in every lesson. So at some point during the process, each child is going to have their needs met.
Yeah. So from more of like a spiritual perspective, how do you see that in action in like, you know, Sabbath school lessons or stuff like that? Do you see that like in a spiritual aspect as much?
Oh, that's a really good question. And honestly, not in most churches. I mean, it would be great if that was the case, but most Sabbath schools are set up where you have a lesson study and you go through and you study the Bible and with the questions, and then you have some discussion on it. And oftentimes it's just the person from the front talking. It's not always meeting everybody's needs. It's interesting, you know, church in and itself, many churches, if you look at the way that the church service is broken down, many of those learning styles are met if it's done properly. So somebody that likes to sing, or, you know, it can tends to be more kinesthetic, getting up and shaking hands and greeting people, their needs are going to be met. If they're wanting to be more artistic, more free with their worship, or singing is going to be what meets their needs. Mm-hmm. So oftentimes people learn the least from what we normally think of them learning the most at. I don't know of anybody that really likes to just sit and be talked to for very long.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's eventually your brain is going to go to sleep.
And it's true, you zone out.
You're going to zone. Listening. You're totally going to zone. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you feel like, you mentioned, you know, people like, you know, like learn through music or learn through, you know, shaking people's hands. Do you feel like you can meet Jesus or like learn about Jesus through those methods rather than like, you know, just, you know, studying the Bible itself?
I think that there's the number one way to meet Jesus is by meeting the people that he follows. Obviously, we're going to need to study the Bible. Obviously, we're going to need to spend time alone with him. That is the number one way. But I also think that when you come close to his believers and to his followers, when you get to know them, that you definitely can learn and grow from them. I think that that's why the Bible says to not ignore being together, to coming together as a group, as, you know, to learn with other believers. I know that during COVID, that was difficult, right? Mm-hmm. When we were all separated, I feel like that a lot of people's spiritual walk really suffered during that time, because we need each other. We need each other to learn. We need each other to build each other up. Now, does that mean like that shaking somebody's hand is going to help you to grow, like put the education of the scripture in your head? No. But it's going to help you to connect with another human being on a personal level, and that helps you to grow, I think, spiritually.
Well, that's fair. That makes sense. You know, connection is always important. Mm-hmm. Yes, but I know for like me personally, like I'm considered, and I consider myself very introverted. Yeah. So for me, like, you know, I'll go to Sabbath school and it's just like it's such a huge group, and I get so intimidated. Like, I don't want to say anything. Mm-hmm. I easily zone out like a lot. So for me, it's like a little harder, you know, like you said, and already, you know, what you mentioned earlier, having somebody just speak to you, you know, for like an hour, that gets a little tiring. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, like, how do you, is there a way to like approach it more from like a solo aspect, you know, like individually, like learning, like just how do you study the Bible essentially?
I think, that's a loaded question. Yeah. You know, individually speaking, I think God is calling each of us to come into personal relationship with him. I think that that's why he wants us to have personal relationships one-on-one with humans, because it also helps us to know how to have a one-on-one relationship with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, studying the Bible, man, I think that it is a learned, for sure, it is something that you have to just, it sounds terrible, but to work at it, it can be a difficult process. I think the number one thing is finding a translation that makes sense to you. That is not, I know a lot of people say, oh, only King James Version. But if it's difficult for you to read, then it's going to be difficult to concentrate on. I know for me personally, learning for me has always been really difficult. Mm-hmm. And studying the Bible was no exception to that. I think that early on, when I first, I really didn't learn to read, truly read, until I was in the fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And so when I first started really learning to read, my mom gave me a Bible that was the New International Version. And it made it so much simpler for me to understand. So I think a person that struggles with learning and struggles with reading, or even just comprehension, making sure that you have a translation, not a paraphrase, a translation that's going to make it easier for you to comprehend and take in. And just really being prayerful that the Lord is going to reveal to you. You know, the Holy Spirit, you cannot diminish the work of the Holy Spirit in a person's life. Like, God is going to show you what he wants you to see when you open his word. Yeah. If you ask him for that, if you implore him, you know, come close to me, help me to know what it is you would have me to learn right now. For me, studying the Bible is really a personal, really personal thing. You know, I keep stickers in my Bible just to, so that I can mark where God has spoken to me. And I put, you know, heart stickers there so I know. I highlight and I write down dates and notes. And so it's a love letter from God to me. And I think if we read it that way, I think sometimes that we make it way deeper than it should be. That sounds terrible. Like, obviously scripture is very, very deep, but I think sometimes we overthink it. I think that sometimes the education process and the learning process and just studying the word is not as complicated as we want it, as we make it. I think sometimes if we just say, Lord Jesus, send your spirit, help me to know what you want me to read from now, this, that he will reveal that to you. You know, Ellen White had a third grade education, and she wrote so many books and so many, you know, God worked through her and through very little education, and yet she got the job done.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
I feel like you kind of already answered this, but I want to ask anyway, in case there's any more detail. How do you, I guess, you know, this could apply to greater education or like, you know, Bible specifically, but like, how do you know you actually learned something? Like you don't just scratch like the top information or whatever. Like, how do you know you're going deeper? How do you know you actually absorbed the material? Mm.
Yeah, it's well, there's no test, right? Yeah. When you're, especially when you're studying spiritually, there's no test. I think that there's a point where you're constantly searching and constantly, I don't think that we ever truly, I don't know the best way to say it. I don't think we ever truly have all the answers, if that makes sense. So there's no way, I think that we constantly need to be going deeper and deeper and deeper. And so, but I do think that there's a, it's a heart thing, I think, if that makes sense. I think that there's a point where you know, oh, this makes sense to me now. And so I think that that's what you're looking for, is that, that especially in spiritual matters where God is just impressing on your heart, this makes sense to me. This is, you know, I haven't just scratched the surface with something. And it's interesting. I think that sometimes we can make it so, so complicated, much more complicated than it needs to be. I know that, I don't know, are you familiar with Fred Rogers, with Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood?
Oh,
like,
yes,
won't you be my neighbor? One of my favorite quotes ever was Fred Rogers, and he said, simple and deep is far more essential than complex and shallow. And so I feel like oftentimes that we think it needs to be complex.
Yeah.
But it's not. Like, the gospel is simple. You know, it's so simple. And that It's simple enough that a thief on a cross could look at Christ and know that that's where his salvation lie, you know, in an instant. The gospel is simple, and simple and deep is so much more essential than complex and shallow. So I guess that, I don't know if that answers the question.
No, I think it definitely does. You know, you got to focus on, you know, like you said, not overthinking things, not overcomplicating things. Just like read, like, you know, if you don't understand the first time, maybe try again.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, keep reading until you feel like, I think I understand this. Mm-hmm. I think I understand what is going on.
Yeah. And I think too, there's oftentimes, you know, I can go back to a piece of scripture that I've read a million times and even have it highlighted or dates in it. And then suddenly when I look at it, something else will pop out at it for me. And it could be years. You know, I think that the Spirit reveals what the Spirit's going to reveal when he's going to. Yeah. So I think it's just, that's where the constant communication and the real relationship with God comes into play. It's that's how you know.
No, that makes sense. So shifting a little bit, what would you say to a person who is, you know, kind of like taking a step back from religion, mm-hmm. you know, trying to like analyze, you know, like in looking back at what they've been learning throughout their whole lives, mm-hmm. you know, maybe they've been a Christian for years. What would you say to that person who's like trying to like evaluate mm-hmm. what they've learned and like, you know, maybe like they're like doubting, maybe like this doesn't seem right or like this doesn't make too much mm-hmm. sense. What do you have to say to that person?
I think questioning is... I think questioning is probably the number one thing we can do in Christianity. Because when you're questioning, that means you're searching. Mm. It's when you cease questioning, that's where the problem lies. I think that when you're questioning, you're always searching. You're always looking. And the truth is, in education, in religion, we are a church with pews that are filled up with imperfect people. Mm-hmm. And we have classrooms that are filled up with imperfect students taught by imperfect teachers. And there's always going to be the chance that something is off. And that's why we keep our eyes firmly fixed on Christ. Mm-hmm. Like, you have to filter everything through the cross. I know that, like, if you think about, say, Snapchat or, you know, whatever, they're always filtering things, right? You can throw this filter up and you look very different than you actually look. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what we're meant to do. I think we're meant to filter everything through the cross of Christ. And that's how you keep a sure road, you know, ahead. And for people, I know that sometimes people my age, when people your age say, I'm taking a step back, it can be very fearful. It can be a fearful thing for us to look at and go, oh, don't leave. You know, we want to run after you and say, don't leave. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's always, questioning is not wrong. You know, mm-hmm. that in the Bible, that's why it says, I believe, help my unbelief. You know, Here's what I believe. Here's what I know to be true. But help this little bit of me that is questioning it. Help my unbelief. It's hard, but I think searching is there's so much benefit in it, to searching and to looking. Like I said, when you stop searching, that's where the problem lies. You know, and it's okay to be wrong. It's okay mm-hmm. to come up with an answer that might not be 100% correct, and going, hey, I got that wrong. I wasn't quite upright on that. But how can I fix that? How can I look at it? And I think that we often forget that the people that crucified Christ knew the letter of the law and they kept the letter of the law, and that they questioned Christ when on the Sabbath he picked wheat and his disciples picked wheat and they rolled it in their hands. Mm-hmm. And they questioned that because they didn't agree with the way he was keeping the Sabbath and the letter of the law. And they didn't understand when he healed people on the Sabbath. And then they questioned that. And so they knew the letter of the law, and they knew, but they didn't know the heart of the law. And they didn't know that there's more to it. It goes deeper than that, and that that the heart, they had a heart problem. They didn't have a law problem. They had a heart problem. And so just keeping in mind that sometimes it's the heart of it is more important than the letter of it. Like the spirit of the law is so important. You know, why are we doing what we are doing? Are we doing it out of love for the Father, for Jesus, for the Spirit? Or are we doing it out of, because we think that's what we have to do in order to be saved, because there's nothing that we can do to be saved other than accept it.
That's very true. And you reminded me of the difference between like understanding and knowing something. Mm-hmm. So I remember watching a video one time of a guy who built like a backwards bike. So basically, like, you know, like you, like to go left, you got to turn right. And to turn left, you got to turn right. Yeah. Like he intuitively knew what to do. But when he got on the bike to do it, like his natural instincts kept him, you know, to ride a bike normally. And it was like he kept falling and falling and falling. So like he understood what he needed to do, but like he didn't know how to do it necessarily.
So I think that sometimes instinctually we know what's right, you know, but it can be difficult sometimes. Habits are hard things to break. Like and we in education and in church, I think, and religion, and we get very, very habitual. And I think that there can be benefit to that. I think that by learning, for instance, to read the Bible every day as a habitual thing is good. But if it takes out if it just becomes rote learning, then it's not real. But that's where you really are just scratching the surface if you're just doing it because. So learning to follow those instincts and to also know that maybe my instincts aren't exactly in the right way. You know, sometimes the gut is not the first thing you need to go with. if you know you're supposed to go right, but your brain is telling you to go left, it's better to go right.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Yeah. So going off this, how do you, if you're not like a studious person, if you're not like an academic person, like a green person, like I barely passed college. Like, let's be honest. Like, like it was hard. I failed a lot of classes, and it was just I realized a little late that like academics just aren't for me. If you're that type of person, how do you like study essentially the Bible or like anything in that matter?
So I'm going to be honest. You know, school has never, was never, will never be easy for me. I do not consider myself to be an academic person. A lot of people would probably say that's crazy since I have, you know, a master's degree and all that, but it was hard work. Yeah. All of that was hard work. And man, I cannot even tell you. I will tell you this. I have never read my Bible all the way through, but I am in the process of listening to it through for the second time. And I listen to it every day, three chapters a day. And I take so much more into it. I am very much an audio learner. And so when I hear it, I'm going to take it in more than sometimes if I read it word for word. And I think that oftentimes that goes back to it has to be done this way, almost like the instinctual, you know, like we're not training, we're not educating for just our minds. We're educating for the whole person, spiritual person. And here's the thing. In a church, in a classroom, you have all these people. Not one of them are exactly the same. I had a kindergarten classroom one time with a set of twins in it, identical twins. And those two little girls were so different. And yet people would say, oh, they're identical twins. No, they're not. They may look alike, but they think very differently. Their brains are very different. I actually saw just this last week a set of conjoined twins. They died. They were 60 years old, and they lived two very different lives, literally conjoined at the brain. And one was an artist, and one was an accountant. And they shared a brain, and they were two very, very different people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's ways to learn. Just because you don't learn one way, and doesn't mean that you is the wrong way. I guess that makes sense. You know, just being academic, okay. You know, I think that we have a tendency in our world, in America, to want to educate everybody to be college professors. That's how we like, that's how we treat academia, mm-hmm. is everybody's going to grow up and be a college professor. Well, no, they're not. They're not, you know, and the world, what a boring place would the world be if that's the way that we, you know, truthfully, creativity, God is the most creative person, you know, creative being that there is. We can just look around the world, like how many different kinds of spiders are there? How many different kinds of flowers are there? He's very creative. Just in humans, he's very creative. And so being creative in how you get to know God, he wants that. He wants, that's the real relationship.
Yeah.
That's the real education, is how does God want to know me? Because he created me this way. He's not going to look at it and go, well, you messed that up. You're not academic enough for me. There goes that relationship. You know, that's not what it is. Mm-hmm. So find what works for you, because that's where the real learning begins. That's where you really do stop just scratching the surface and going a little deeper when you find what really works for you. There's a, you know, I think you talked about TED Talks, when you think about TED Talks, I think here's the best way to describe it. I don't know if you are familiar with Francis Chan, but he said that the difference between, it's like looking, going to a restaurant and looking at a menu, and then really eating, ordering the food and eating it.
Yeah.
And like, oftentimes we just look at the menu. Mm. We don't really ever order the food. And sometimes we just order appetizers.
Yeah.
But there's more of a meal. What's gonna be the best meal for you? Not everybody's gonna order the same thing at a restaurant. So how are you going to find what works for you is the best thing, the best way I can answer that.
No, that's true. That goes back to your point of being, you know, simple and deep, where it's like you have one food, that's the simplicity, and you have the food, that's the deepness. Whereas like if you just have the menu, yes, you have this whole array of that's things, right. But you're staying very shallow.
Yeah.
You're just staying on the surface of things. You don't actually know what that means. You know, like you don't know how it tastes. You don't know how it smells. You don't know anything.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like if you think about a sermon that you have in church, or even a lesson, is not meant to be the full meal. That's meant to be the appetizer. Like it's meant to, or a Sabbath school lesson. It's meant to say, hey, this is something that you can go home and dig a little deeper on. This is something that you can look at a little deeper and learn more and grow from. It's not meant to be the full meal. You know, church, it was never meant to be the relationship. Like if that's where your relationship with the Lord is Saturday or Sunday morning, sitting in a pew, listening to somebody preach, you don't have a relationship. You know, you have entertainment.
Yeah.
And so if you're taking that as your full meal, and that's the only, then you're really on baby food.
Yeah.
You know, or not even like you're literally ordering
the scraps.
Yeah. You're picking the scraps up and not really getting the full sustenance and the meal that is there for you.
Yeah. No, that's fair. So going off, you know, like, can education be entertaining? Like, can studying be, you know, a joyous process that doesn't seem like you have to stress over, you know, have to like labor over as much?
It should be.
Yeah.
It should be a joyful process. It should be something that's fun. I think that sometimes we forget early childhood education it's fun, right? Yeah. And at some point in time, we think that kids need more meat and potatoes, or adults need more meat and potatoes, but it should always be a joyful process. I mean, you probably remember your college classes that you enjoyed the most, and you probably learned the most from those, and they probably were the least academic, maybe not the least academic, but they were the ones that you were interested in and the ones that you wanted to really learn from. And I think that it should be a joyful process. Always, you know, that it should be something that, I get that, you know. I love TED Talks. I love listening to TED Talks, and they the number one most watched TED Talk ever in the history of TED Talks was Sir Ken Robinson from 2006, and it's on education and creativity in education. It's called "Is Education Killing Creativity?" And you know, when in that, he does, he talks a lot about how we're just educating for our brains and we're forgetting the whole body and that our spirits in that. I think we have such, I think, such stress at trying to get things right. But in that podcast, he says, if we are afraid to be wrong, then nothing creative is ever going to happen. Like you have to be willing to be wrong to get somewhere with some, you know. And so I think that we just, it's a difficult process, but it should be a joyful process where we're not afraid to be wrong and where it's fun. Because I look at Christ with his disciples, and was it hard work? Yeah, but you also see them, you know, on a boat and fishing, and he's using examples and he's, you know, telling stories. And we look at the master teacher. It wasn't boring. You know, if you read the Gospels, it's not boring. You know, actually, none of the Bible is really boring when you really look at it and dig into it. So, yeah, 100% should be a joyful, not boring process at all.
Well, that's good. That's really reassuring. Yeah. No, I just feel like, you know, me personally, I feel like, you know, there's always, you know, that societal pressure, you know, family pressure that's, you know, you have to like get good grades to get into a good college. You have to get good grades in college to get a good job. And you have to like, you know, keep doing that cycle and, you know, that pressure just adds up and builds. And, you know, it really, for me, it took a lot out of, you know, the joyfulness of the experience of like learning, like, you know, instead of like, you know, doing because it has to be done versus, you know, learning just for the joy of learning.
Yeah. I think if we're learning for the joy of learning from the get-go, I think we'll learn more.
Yeah.
I think sometimes there's the pressure. We put so much pressure on kids, you know. Generation Z is the most anxious generation in history, really. And there's not a whole lot of data on Generation Alpha, which is coming next, the younger ones that we have right now. Anybody, you know, under 5 or under 15 or so is considered Generation Alpha. But man, there's so much anxiety in these babies. And it's because we just put so much pressure on them. And it's just not that deep. Like, we just really need to, we all need to just take a step back, I think, sometimes and learn that, man, why are we putting so much pressure? It's going to happen. You know, it's really seeking to know the heart of God is really what it comes down to, and really seeking to learn for the joy of learning, even math. You know, like, and reading, learning, we learn to read so that ultimately we can learn to know God better. Yeah. Like, that's ultimately why we learn to read. And, you know, the process, if I were to ask you right now to tell me how you read, tell me the process of you reading, would you know?
Not exactly.
No, you wouldn't. But you learned that process way back in kindergarten, first grade. You learned how to break words down, how they sound, the rules that go along with it. But now your brain just does it automatically because you learned it. And that's kind of how it is, I think, with everything. I think that we forget that ultimately all this stuff is going to become natural, like riding a bike, and we're going to, you know, go left when we should or right when we should. And sometimes it may be backwards, but that the process is sometimes difficult, but that it's worth it, and it should be joyful in that process. Just trying to take the pressure off, just take the pressure off yourself and off of, you know, definitely off of kids. I think that sometimes we want them to be right all the time. But it's okay to be wrong. I think there's an old saying that if you're not failing, you're not trying. And if you're not trying, you're not living. Like, failure is part of life. You know, getting it wrong is part of life. We're never gonna be all right all the time.
No. So when it comes to like students specifically, mm-hmm. like, you know, doubting and like questioning their faith, like how do as teachers or educators or parents, mm-hmm. like, you know, become okay with that? Or like, how mm-hmm. do you like react or how should you react to that?
You know, it's scary. It's scary for us to look at it. And a deconstruction of faith is real. And it's something that happens, you know, quite often when kids leave their home and their church environment and they go away to college and they start like thinking for themselves and digging deeper. And that's okay. It's okay for them to do that. It's scary. But the truth of the matter is that religion has to be yours. Mm-hmm. It cannot be your parents' religion. It cannot be something that somebody else gives you and you just accept it. You can't get to heaven on somebody else's beliefs. Yeah. So you have to take it in for yourself, deconstruct it, and say, hey, what do I believe? Where do I stand on this? It's okay to ask questions. The truth is where are you asking those questions of? You know, who are you getting the answers from is the big thing. You know, seeking people who are going to be honest with you and who are not going to be afraid of your questions. Mm. But ultimately, you have to hammer it out, you know? You have to just not be afraid to ask the questions. And as parents and as teachers and pastors and all of us that are older, you know, not being afraid of it. And I think sometimes we can be almost like a horse that senses fear, you know? It's like, yeah. Oh, wait, don't question anything. I don't want you to question anything. Just believe it. Mm-hmm. But that's not what faith is, right? No. Faith is having it for yourself and mm-hmm. wrestling with it. You know, Jacob wrestled with God.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
Yeah. Literally, he wrestled with God.
Yeah.
And I think that the Bible is full of people that questioned.
Mm-hmm.
That wrestled, and it's doing the hard work of wrestling with God and saying, "Hey, help my, like we talked about before, I believe, but help my unbelief." And sometimes there's more unbelief than there's belief, and it's wrestling through that, mm-hmm. you know. But if you're not asking the question, just keep talking.
Yeah.
keep asking. Keep going to the people you trust. That's going to be the best thing. And not for the people that you trust to not be afraid of those questions. That's where the real strength comes. Don't be afraid of the question. Embrace them. Because you can't have answers without questions.
That's true. Yeah. So one of the reasons I started this whole podcast was because I have these questions that I struggle mm-hmm. with. You know, all these questions like come from me and they are things that I deal with on a daily basis almost.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, this is very comforting to like, you know, talk to the experts, talk to mm-hmm. the people who I feel like know what they're talking about to help answer and help guide me through these questions. But for the people who feel like they don't have a support group, they mm-hmm. don't have people who they can like turn to, what would you say to them? Like, how would you help them like find those people?
Mm. Oh, that's a tough question. You know, I think that, I know for sure we are living in a time when people consider themselves to be very lonely and that there's a lot of people I think that would fall in that group of people that they don't feel safe with. And I would say speaking to people like myself, pastors, teachers, parents, to be safe, to not be a person that you would feel like that the people that you love don't feel like they could come to. That's the first thing. But the second thing is, you know, it's very tempting to pick up your phone and to look on the internet. Like, yes. I have these questions. I'm going to look on the internet.
Or ChatGPT, like, you know.
Help yeah. Yeah. Here, let me chat with this person that I don't know. I would say just, man, really try to connect with a local church. That's, I know that sounds, when you're questioning, that's not always easy. Reach out to people, your friends might not always have the right answers either, because oftentimes they're questioning too. You know, I don't know. It's a difficult question. I think that's why it's so important that we create communities that feel welcoming and accepting, and that you don't feel like there's no place to go, that there's never a situation where a young adult leaves the church because there was no place to get their questions answered. That, I think, is one of the saddest things, and I really think that happens way more than we'd like to admit. By and large, this is a very graying church. I mean, I would like to say that was not the case, but there's not a whole lot of people your age sitting in the pews anymore. Mm-hmm. And it does somewhat go back to that deconstruction of faith. But instead of deconstructing and saying, hey, and wrestling with it, they're just giving up. So my answer would be, don't give up. Mm-hmm. Keep seeking. And man, ask anybody and everybody. If you see somebody I really think praying and asking God to lead you to the people and the best places to get answers. But don't go to ChatGPT. don't do that. Don't go on YouTube. You're always gonna. Don't go to what, Instagram, Facebook, all those places to find the answers. How impressive for you to say, I have these questions, and to not just say, I give up, you know, but to seek ways to find answers, to talk to people, experts. Man, to even think that I'm sitting in the expert chairs. That's because sometimes I still have questions. Yeah. You know, I'm 49 years old, and there are days when I go, oh man, I don't know if I really get that. I don't know if I really understand that fully. When you're thinking about old covenant, new covenant, and you're thinking about, you know, the deep stuff, it's hard. You got to wrestle with it. I still wrestle with it. I still go and ask people that I think know more than me. You know, I know somebody who went and talked to all of their college professors, like ask them, hey, I have this spiritual question. Can I talk to you about it outside of class? Mm-hmm. But how do you do that when you don't feel like you have somebody to talk to? I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's hard. No, I definitely remember in college I had like random questions, like they had nothing to do with my class, but I would like be in my professor's office like, hey, I have this question real quick. We end up talking for like an hour, but like if you don't have that system or that like reliability with somebody, it makes it so much harder. Mm-hmm. So I guess it just starts with, you know, trust, you know, building that trust with somebody, or like putting yourself in this, like, you know, in the vulnerable place where you allow yourself to maybe not fully trust the person yet, but like, you know, allowing them to, like, you know, maybe they might have the answers. Maybe you just go up and like, you know, make yourself vulnerable and ask them anyway.
Mm-hmm. It's seeking. Mm-hmm. I think you find what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. You know, if you seek me, you will find me. He answered, you know, he tells us that it's a promise. If you seek me, you'll find me. And so seeking, just, man, if you see somebody that ask the question, you know, finding, and no, you don't have to open up, you know, all your deepest, darkest secrets to ask a question. Mm-hmm. And you may be surprised where you find your answers.